Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Tim Castle is my guest today. He is head of sales for Playground Southeast Asia. He has over a decade's worth of experience leading sales teams across London, Sydney, Hong Kong, Singapore. He's got a book out about sales. It's not out yet, so this is a scoop. It will be out. When will it be out, Tim?
End of the year.
Can you give us a heads up on the title?
It's called The Art of Sales.
The Art of Sales, which is what today is all about. I don't know about you, but I do not like selling. But we all know that it is the lifeblood of any company, any business, any startup, any entrepreneur has to learn the art of selling. So can you hone your sales skills? That is a challenge I am putting to Tim today. Tim, can you improve all our sales skills? Do you believe that anyone can be better at sales?
Absolutely. I believe that anyone that's got a willingness to learn and is committed to the art of sales is able to take their sales game to the next level. Right now, it's not about being transactional. It's about collaboration. And it's the one chance in 2020 for you to become an entrepreneur of your own book of business. So that's how I see it. It's shifting from becoming, what can I get out of this? A transaction, to collaborating. If you love being around people and relationship building, mm-hmm. and these are all skills that we can learn and we can train and we can get a mentor, I would say if you've got a sales department, look for the best seller in that organization, in your organization. So everyone's got a sales department. Find that best seller and emulate what they do. Because there's traits that go on within that seller, like taking initiative, adaptability, perseverance. If you look closely, you'll start to see that they do consistently, day in, day out.
Okay. When it comes to observing behavioral traits that great sellers seem to have in common, I have to say my own observation is they seem to be extroverts more than introverts, right? They're the ones banging their own drum sometimes. And the louder ones in the room. So if you're not the loudest person in the room, do you think you can be a good salesperson if you're an introvert?
I think it's all about putting yourself in a position for success. So yes, there are traits that are aligned with extroversion that we see that allow extroverts to put them in themselves a position for success. But when you think about a customer, a client, there's a complete spectrum of personalities there. So realistically, it comes down to making yourself adaptable and being able to uncover and ask questions around the needs, desires. You can fall in love with the product, but I think it's better to fall in love with your clients and then really try to understand their needs. And so when we thought about traits, one of the things I like to do is create what's called momentum moments.
Okay.
So that's where I will sit down for half an hour and I will write out 20 emails and I will get into the habit and the mindset and I'll be really, really focused. So what I'm doing here is I'm batching tasks, but I'm also pushing myself out of my comfort zone to go and try and create momentum in the market. And so anyone can take that up, whether you're extroverted, introverted, type A, type B. That's something that everybody can put into place. And when you do that, you create a virtuous circle. So because you put out all of these meeting requests and invites and you're saying, right, I want to come meet you in market next week, let's do it. Put them all in 1 week, right? What's the worst that can happen?
They can say no.
They can say no.
And then you have to deal with the rejection, which triggers memories of when you were 3.
That's true. The way I look at it is the worst that can happen, which is the best, is they all say yes. And you've got to do 20 meetings in a week, right? Because I'm expecting that they're going to want to see what I've got to sell. So it's going in with that mindset of this is going to happen. It's already sold.
See, this is the difference between a top class seller and someone who does not like sales. So I do not like sales. Help me with that block. I mean, a lot of people say that to me when they come on.
Selling is all about giving. So when you change the mindset from rejection to you've got a perfect product for this person, you've got a solution. So again, it comes back to how can you uncover the needs, desires, the wants of your clients? How can you fall more deeply in love with your clients and help to serve them in ways that are innovative and creative and make their day? When you go in with that mindset, it completely shifts the gears on what you're trying to achieve. Also, when you're a seller, you're there to serve. So it's a service business. You're there to make someone's life a lot better.
I have friends in the, for example, life insurance business. When other people receive a call for them, you know, they tend to treat them like they would, you know, tend to step back a little bit because the assumption is, oh my gosh, they're going to come and try and sell me something again. So, I mean, in some circles, there is the sense that if your occupation is sales, that you're always going to be selling to your loved ones, to your network, and that puts people off selling as well, to some extent. So, for the person who does not want to be perceived as selling all the time, but wants to improve their sales skills, where should they start? And do you think, you know, it's a good idea not to target your social networks?
I think it's, yeah, again, it's about coming back to what is the essence of selling. So it's trust building. And if you start in that position of trying to build trust, so being able to set expectations is a great example, right? If you try and push every single product into your clients and always say yes and always are late for meetings and, you know, you don't set the example, suddenly your clients are going to start to lose trust in you. Whereas if you're able to say, look, what you're trying to achieve isn't actually going to be worthwhile doing with our product, but I recommend X, Y, and Z. Or if you're trying to do this, this is what you should do. Mm. So you become an advisor, you become a consultant, you become a lot more of a valued resource because it's all about adding value. Mm. And adding value goes both ways. And once you do that, you start to come from a position of trust, you start to collaborate and build that platform and that foundation for where you can take your relationship forward. And I think, again, like then someone sees you come in the room and they go, oh no, they're not going to try and sell me again because they know that they trust you to say, if this isn't the right product for them, if this isn't the right service for them, if this isn't the right time. And it's that shift into becoming a valued advisor.
Can you share some tips on how we can look at target groups? As you say, a group is not homogenous. You know, it's made up of disparate individuals and personality types. So any tips on how we can analyze target groups and improve what we're offering when it comes to positioning ourselves to our audience?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're in a very privileged position here in 2020 where we've got access to social media. There are things like Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We're able to do a lot of due diligence on our clients, and we're also able to be creative with them. So I was working for a business a few years ago, and I was in a business development role. Hmm. And I really wanted to show that I could take these accounts from zero to $1 million, you know, in 6 months. So really re-energize these accounts. Hmm. And so what you've got to do is find the influencers within the organization that are then influencers, are people that are leaned on by decision makers for advice, quick tips, who should we book with, who should we go with, who's the best in market. So you have to find these influencers. And the way you do that is you take an analysis of the organization and you look at who knows about your product, who knows about your market, who knows about your industry, who knows about you being the person that's selling this, and then what do they like, dislike, and how much information do you have on that, and how often are you seeing them? And if you start to analyze the data in that way, and you do have to get that granular with your people strategy, you can then start to highlight who's an influencer within your organization that you're trying to target, and then how you can get through to the decision makers. And I did that with a number of people. Like, they had motivations to be promoted. Mm-hmm. So if you can find people that want to be promoted, it shows that they're ambitious, mm-hmm. that they're hungry, they mm-hmm. want to start stepping up and showing a leadership capacity. And if they're wanting to do that, they need to bring something to the table. So why not bring your product to the table? Why not let them bring your innovation to the table? So how can you help your buyer look good in front of their peers, but also elevate their own needs and motivation? So one of those is obviously recognition, promotions, moving forward in their career, and others align, making their day job easier. So I was planning these trips for Thailand because I have a wealth of experience. I got married in Thailand. I love Thailand as a country. And so I was planning an itinerary for this client's holiday in Thailand. It took me a lot of hours to put together, but just going that extra mile and putting that together allowed me to break into the inner circle and then get to know these clients on a deeper level.
Really interesting how you twin your goals with the goals of the person that you're leaning on as an influencer as well. So it's really
absolutely
about understanding people.
Oh, it's hugely about the psychology of understanding people and having that EQ and that empathy. Mm. That's another thing as sellers that we can do really, really well. When we want to increase our sales, what's the one thing you could do? You've got to understand where that person is, where that client is, what's going on in their day. And your ability to be able to take that client out for a drink or a meal or just step away and say, you know, I get it. I get what's going on in your world and I'm aware. and I'm going to stop hounding you to see if this sale's coming through, and I'm going to help you achieve your goals.
Mm. You know, some say that persuasion isn't something that comes naturally within the Asian context. I mean, you talked a little bit about understanding influences within an organization, and there is sort of a hierarchy of who the leaders lean on. And in Asia, that hierarchy tends to be maintained with the people at the base of the pyramid, so to speak, not necessarily challenging, not necessarily speaking up, not necessarily asking for what they want all the time. So are there some sales tactics or methods of persuasion that you think are especially effective in the Asian context?
Absolutely. I think everyone's looking to get ahead. And the way you do that is through social proof here in Asia. So I have a story about a notoriously difficult client that it takes months to get a meeting in with this client. And finally I did. And I went in, I went up to the reception. And this is when I learned about the art of social proofing and recognition and how valuable that is. So I went up to reception. I told the lady, I'm here to see so-and-so. She said, okay, just sit over there in the lobby on the sofa. I'll be out in a bit. And obviously, I'm there and I've put a lot of prep into this meeting because it's a big one. But also, it's taken me a couple of months to get it in the diary, so I'm not going to waste it. And I sat there, I pick up a magazine, a few minutes go by and other guests are arriving and getting taken through into the main office, back into where the boardroom is and meeting rooms. And sort of 5 minutes, 10 minutes goes by and okay, where's my client? Eventually, a couple of them come out. They come and meet me and I stand up and go over and go to shake their hands. And like, no, Tim, let's sit down. Let's do the meeting here. So that was a power move from a negotiation standpoint to go, right, you're not sort of good enough, or I'm going to keep you out in the cold right now until you can go back into the main meeting rooms. If I had let my frustrations, my kind of anguish over the fact that I put so much into this product demo, this presentation, I really want to have the boardroom and their full attention, and the fact that this lobby is not the best way and place to be selling, I would have lost the deal. But instead, I shifted gears and said, how can I turn this to my advantage? And so this is where, again, I learned about social proofing, right? So what happened was I made a conscious effort to acknowledge and say hello to anybody that came through the doors while we're in that reception that I knew. So I was building credibility in front of these clients to say, hey, hang on, I've already met people in this organization. I have other accounts and departments. You need to be working with us. You need to be seeing us. And by doing that, it created this kind of FOMO, fear of missing out. But it also triggered, I think, was, hang on, I can take this back into my department, so the person that I was selling to, and actually look good if I bring this through, because this is something that we shouldn't have messed with. And therefore, the fact that I hadn't just let my emotions take over the sale and I made it a mission to deliver the best presentation of my life. I was going to blow their socks off, even if we're in this lobby. And what happened after 20 minutes, the client stood up, said, I'm going to go get George. George needs to see this. And so I think either they had triggered that social recognition pathway for them, I'd uncovered what mattered for them, they could take that in and show this innovative product to George. So George came out and he brought Sophia with him and they both sat down and the same thing happened again. I went into my pitch again, I went through it. 20 minutes later, Natalie would love this again. So it created that buzz and that became a mechanism that I understood how you can create the fun and the energy and you can sell more.
That is great story. Great, great, great story. Do you think likability is at the heart of being a good salesperson?
I think likability is very important. I think at the heart of any sale is trust. So there are tactics, there's persuasion, and they're really good for short-term tactics. But when you get deeper into the psychology of becoming a better salesperson, mm-hmm. when you hone in on trust, you're going to become more likable, right? Because trust and likability, if you're able to be honest with someone, if you're able to tell someone what's going on, and you become a source of knowledge. So likability is linked to actually what are you delivering? Are you delivering value? So again, those momentum moments are really important, because if you're having 20 meetings a week and they're stacked up on one after the other, you've got your finger on the pulse of the market. You're a source and a wealth of information. And because of that, you can add more value to your clients. And so likability, definitely very, very important. But I think it's more facets than that. It's about owning your own self, bringing your unique self to the table and having fun, creating that energy and creating that ability to take them on a journey and tell that story, not just spout facts and statistics. Did you know that 63% of people remember stories more, 5% remember statistics? So it's really important when you're presenting, when you're pitching, to hone in on the story.
Absolutely. I mean, when I help people think about how to structure a podcast, for example.
Yeah, I'm sure you're
It's all about the narrative, because narrative is big now. But how do you tell that story that compels people to keep wanting to listen in? So that's part of, you know, I think what we're seeing around the world, podcasts are really taking off, right? And it's all based on storytelling, the art of that. And I'm sure that's part of sales as well. I wonder if you can share with us, you know, you've led training for startups and big corporations. And I'm sure you attend training sessions as well as someone who wants to keep abreast of.
Absolutely. You know, always field. A student. Always a student.
Is there a mentor or a training session that you remember vividly that, you know, really provided an insight that shifted the way you think about sales?
Yeah, Ryan Serhant has been a big mentor to me. He's a seller of real estate in New York, and he's on Bravo TV's Million Dollar Listing. And he's got a course, well, he's got a book and a course out now. And I think anyone looking to improve their sales, if you follow mentors, everybody's got a mentor, right? So follow mentors, find someone that aligns with your personality and be open and willing to listen and learn from them. The key message I've taken from that is to take initiative, right? If you take initiative every single day, you're going to have more success in sales. And that's things like, I found out that my client over the phone through open questions, so how, what, when, where, who, why, the normal stuff. What you need to do is add a transition statement to that.
Mm.
Make it more authentic because it lands better.
Can you give an example?
So instead of just going, why was that? I'm really interested to find this out. Or how come? Can you tell me more about that? Things like that where you're starting to just bring the buyer along and keep them talking, really make it more authentic. It lands better.
Is there sometimes where silence is important, where you just, you know, if you're asking for, I had an expert on, for example, and she talked about how, especially in Asia, when asking for a raise, sometimes not saying too much can lead the other person to open up because people are uncomfortable with silences and tend to want to fill the silences. And I wonder if that silence.
You can definitely talk yourself out of the deal. 100%. Talking too much will kill the deal. You should be aiming to listen. And that goes back to your point about extroverts, introverts.
Mm.
There's a perception here that being loud is what's going to get you the sale. Actually, it's who listens best that's going to get you the sale. The reason that it's extroverts tend to win is because they're able to put themselves into those positions that allow them to listen more. So it's about taking the initiative. So, for example, I was on the phone with a client and I got the sense through these open questions and transition statements that they weren't sure that they were going to do the deal. And this was a big deal. It would have been the biggest deal in Malaysia that, you know, we've done. And so I took initiative to fly up there straight away. I didn't wait for the, you know, approval. I didn't wait for the red tape. I used my own money. I flew up there that day. Didn't even tell the client I was coming. Said, hang on, I happen to be in town. Let's catch up for 20 minutes. You know, knowing that once we got talking, it would all come out. And therefore, by being able to go the extra mile, take that initiative and just almost you're in the flow of energy with your clients and you're responding to their needs and you're proactively taking the action that's necessary to then move them through the sales cycle. Because remember, they're emotional creatures. And when you're in sales, you all go through these different emotions of excitement. Then you hit fear, disappointment. Have I done the right thing? Is it going to work out? Mm. Then suddenly, and to get someone through to happiness and relief, it's a cycle of seven different emotions. And so you need to be aware of where your clients are on that cycle at any given point and respond appropriately.
But what if you feel like your client thinks that you're like a buzzard slamming against a window consistently? And they want to keep the window shut.
Then you're doing it wrong. Yeah.
You're doing it wrong.
You need to find a way into their heart. And you need to, yeah. There's a sophistication to it. There's an art to it.
There is.
That is how not to be annoying. And so, and again, 95% of sales are made on the phone, right? But it's not calling up going, have you got money for me? Have you buy this? It's actually check-in calls. So a check-in call is when you see someone's got promoted, when you see something's going on with their organization, you're calling to check in. And through calling to check in and getting into that habit of just being constantly in communication, updating your clients, you get more information back and you're not seen as annoying. Because the questions that you're asking aren't, please buy something from me.
Right.
They're, how's it going? I heard you got promoted. What does that mean for you? And all this information sharing is going on.
It's really about connection.
Absolutely. 100%.
So a lot of your day is about maintaining these connections?
Maintaining and growing.
You know, you talk about batching. And, I mean, do you have a set amount of time that you set aside for this?
Yeah. So, again, back to my mentor, Ryan Serhant. Hmm. He taught me how to split up my day. So he has something that's called finder, keeper, doer. So in the mornings between 8 and 10, you put your CEO hat on. That's where you're all about finding business. How are we going to keep business coming in? What are we going to do to grow this business? What activities? And that is the connection piece, right? That's where we're thinking about strategies on a macro level. Where does this business need to be in 6 months? Then from 12 to 2 p.m., you put your COO hat on. How are we going to keep our clients that we currently have happy? And again, so there's this two-pronged approach. You've got prospects and leads that you want to target, and then you've got current clients because you can't forget about them. Mm-hmm. And then finally in the day, you've got doer. That's when you're doing the activity. You're putting all of these plans into place. Now, I take that in a bit different. Like, I start a bit earlier and I change the times around, but I will find I do those themes throughout my day consistently every day so that we're pushing forward and growing the business on one front, but we're also keeping our current clients very happy. And then I'm doing enough activity because it is about taking the activity. You can't just do the two pieces of thinking and strategy. You've got to be doing the actions consistently, getting those meetings, getting in front of clients and finding out that information about what they need and desire.
So we started the show off by talking about how selling is a muscle. And, the experts that I speak with say, if you don't take an action that builds that muscle in the next 4 days, you're never going to do it. So I wonder if you can give a challenge to the listeners on what they can do to get started.
I can give one right now. The first person to text in gets 2 copies of my book. So text in the word initiative and I'll give that person a couple of books. On another note, so if that happens, that would be great. But on another note, I think it's about, again, being persistent, understanding that these people are in those cycles of emotions. And so I would try and create your own momentum moment. Sit down now. You'll be surprised. If you take a minute and you just see how many draft emails you can draft up and send one out. Think of a client right now. Send one out. Ask for a meeting with the hooks.
I like that. Ask for a meeting.
Make the ask.
Come on. Let's do it. Okay. Well, I hope that we've helped someone out there when it comes to the art of selling, which, by the way, is the name of his upcoming book, right? Art of Sales.
That's correct. The Art of Sales.
All right. End of this year. It's lovely talking to you again, Tim. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much, Michelle.
He's Tim Castle, Head of Sales. And the last time he was on, he was talking about The Art of Negotiation, which, by the way, is the title of his second book. So now you're on book three.
Book three, yeah, that's right. The Art of Decision Making.
Which is going to be out
March 2020, so
wonderful.
Next month.
Well, congratulations, and thanks for being here, Tim.
Thank you so much.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.